C1C. Number 11B.
So Carnal belief defraud us. Nobody defrauds us. Only carnal beliefs defraud us. It's only that which happens within us. The moment we are not blending with the divine, we are defrauding us. We can't say that guy and that guy is a bad guy, he betrayed me. We can't be betrayed. We live in our consciousness. How could manhood be defrayed? You see, we are now talking about our true manhood here, about the sonship. So, if we have seen that our origin is in mind, and therefore we are the idea of mind, if we have seen that our substance is spiritual, how can an idea that is spiritual be defrauded by anything? Impossible. You cannot defraud an idea. It lives in its own realm, absolutely sinless, absolutely untouched by sin. So it's only carnal beliefs defraud us. She didn't say all the people in the world defraud you, betray you. They make man an involuntary hypocrite. If we are not careful, you see, we make ourselves a hypocrite, producing evil when we would create good. Forming deformity. Can you see? Deformity, what is deformity? Counterfeit of identity. When the identity is not seen, we have a deformity. When we would outline grace and beauty, injuring those whom we would bless. Injuring, blessing, you see, as a sense of soul in it, because soul is untouchable. One cannot injure soul sense. An identity of being cannot be injured. He becomes a general miscreator. You see how nicely she puts it? Miss-creator, as if she wants to bring out, it's the counterfeit of it. Always when you have counterfeit, this is the opposite of identity, a sense of soul. Can you hear? The whole text is full of either soul ideas or counterfeit of soul, depicting man and the mortal man. So he becomes a general miscreator who believes he is a semi-god. Always when you have idolatry, it's a counterfeit of soul. Because soul says there is only one identity, and that is the true identity, the divine identity. And the moment you deface and deform that identity as God, you have a semi-god, many gods. Who believes he is a semi-god? Yes. His touch turns hope to dust. Well, soul does the very opposite. Soul really turns dust into hope. The dust we all have trod. He might say in Bible language, the good that I would, I do not. There is no identity in it. But the evil which I would not, that I do. You see, again, loss of identity. It does not coincide. There is no congruency. There is no coincidence, no correlation. See, always when you have this congruency, it means it's identical. And soul says, I change not. I change not. Whereas Paul, because as long as he was in the law and has not yet seen the Christ, he said, at that time when I was just in the law of mortal mind, then I wanted to do the good, and with all the good I wanted to do, I did evil. I didn't want to do evil, but I did it. So we can see that at this point we begin to learn to know something about man here, that as we blend thought of existence with the spiritual and work as God works. You see those first two lines, lines 7 and 8, that's the piece of it, and said, if we do that, then we are absolutely free from any deformation, from any defrauding, from any, from that our activities, our feelings, our emotions can be deformed and misrepresented, that they can be a miscreator. This would, you see, blending with the divine is our security, that we can say if we are in a line with the divine, we can't even sin, we can't do something wrong. You feel how you get your manhood here, huh? That unchangeable manhood, that untouchable manhood, the moment we see it as soul. We go further, and just listen to it. There can be but one creator. Oh, yes, we know that. But there is a comma. Who has created all? We have now the one and the all. You see, one creator that created all. Principle has infinite ideas. There's only one principle, one cause, but the effect, the manifestation, the phenomena are infinite. But all come from that center. So it is the creator out from which comes all. Whatever seems to be a new creation, like an invention, like a discovery, is it an invention? Is it a discovery? Did we create something new? Is but the discovery of some distant idea of truth. So she begins to show that everything has already always been created and is already existing in the pre-stabilized realm of reality. We'll come back to it with the next chapter then, but here she indicates it already. Everything that we discover is actually not an invention and not something new. It's something that has always existed. It may have been distant. That's her wording. She used a distant idea of truth. We, in the sciences, in the philosophies, they wouldn't call that a distant idea of truth. They would call it an idea that existed in the pre-stabilized realm of harmony, but was not seen, you see. A distant idea does not want to say that this idea has been up on Venus or on the moon or somewhere very far away, but it just wants to say one didn't bring it near, one didn't make it alive right now, one didn't bring it to the point of isness here. But what she wants to really show is that everything always existed. That whatever man discovers new is never really new. It has always been there. Else, if it's not the distant idea of truth, then it would be the new multiplication or self-division of mortal thought. As when some finite sense peers from its cloister with amazement and attempts to pattern the infinite. So she first establishes here the terrific sense that actually everything that now man discovers and sees and acts and does is actually only ideas that have always existed. They may have been distant, but they were always there. So man doesn't create something new. There is only one creator, and he has already created everything. So man does not create something new. And therefore she goes on and says, the multiplication of a human and mortal sense of persons and things, not only person, and things, which would be inventions, production, the technical age, all that is not creation. We think it is creation, we think we have created. Really, the factor is that we have created the things, the icebox, because Adam didn't have an icebox. We have created it. Because he didn't have a piano. We created it. We have it now. He didn't have it. And here she comes in and says, no, no, that's not true. That's a mortal sense of creation. And we'll see the next chapter that she gets very hot on this point. It is not creation. It's not creation. So we better give up that we are a creator. A central thought, like an atom of dust thrown into the face of spiritual immensity, is dense blindness. Instead of a scientific, eternal consciousness of creation. Therefore, she depicts here man and the multiplication of man's universe in which he lives is actually what, from the point of view of science, is a scientific eternal consciousness of creation. Creation, therefore, here as what constitutes man is shown to be what is that he can reason in science, that he can reason scientifically in consciousness. And in reasoning scientifically in consciousness, you can be quite sure that you can have just 600 pages of science and health, and you can live a whole life in excitement, in adventure, in spiritual adventure. You discover, you discover, you discover, you discover. I don't know if anybody has such a good life as I have had, such a wonderful life as I have had. For 40 years I have been discovering the textbook. I have discovering Christian Science. Always further, always further. I never got into the ruts of repeating and repeating, of rattling off sentences. I never had to do that. I have never to multiply my statements and rattle them off 1,000 times and 2,000 times a year. Divine love will meet all our needs and so on. I don't need to rattle off that kind of thing. They are not science. They are rattling offs. The moment you begin to see this, what she calls a scientific consciousness, you have a scientific consciousness and begin to have a consciousness that is structured in the science of it. There is no end to multiplication. No end to multiplication. My head is already full for next year's summer school, you know. I say, oh, next year. I think next year I can finally show you this and this and this that has come into my mind over the last month or so. And there's no end. There's no end. This is science. That's the man of science. We have here truth as principle. The man of science. A scientific consciousness. All those distant ideas of truth, they come always a bit nearer and nearer and nearer, until they take really form and they are right here, and then you can deliver them. We go to life. How do we see that we come to a different subject? It starts out and says the fading form. The moment I read the fading, I know this has nothing to do with life. It's a counterfeit of life. Why should they fade? And somehow something rings in my ear and says, I guess here she starts out to tell me something about life. She may start with the opposite, with the counterfeit. That's all right. We know that we can reverse those statements. The fading forms of matter. The mortal body. Usually she has just talked about the body up to now, that mind is not in body. She hasn't said that mind is not in the mortal body. She now accentuates mortal because she comes to the tone of life, the mortal body. And material earth are the fleeting, again fleeting, you see, the counterfeit of isness, of life. So we have the fading, the fleeting concept of the human mind. They have their day, counterfeit of life. Isn't it clear? She just pours out counterfeit of life concepts like fleeting, they have their day before what? The permanent facts and their perfection spirit appear. Why doesn't she say that they have their day before the facts? It would also be right. But why does she say the permanent facts? Because she is accentuating life and not so much facts. Actually, she is accentuating both naturally here, because facts is an idea of truth, and permanent is the idea of life, and we are in the tone of truth and life. So permanent facts is just pinpointing what she wants to bring out, that she says, well, man is actually really that which is a permanent fact of being, and which therefore should look away from the fading forms, from the fleeting concepts. They have their day, they come to an end. But here are the permanent facts of being. The crude creations of mortal thought must finally give place. Finally give place, they must disappear. Instead of staying here, instead of having isness of being, to the glorious forms, and she takes form in a positive sense, it's always an idea of truth, the form of truth, which we sometimes behold in the camera of divine mind, when the mental picture is spiritual and eternal. Why not just spiritual? She must stress the eternality, because she is now showing us that the facts of being, the forms of being are permanent, are eternal, that they are not mortal. Mortals must look beyond fading. You have again fading, finite forms. If they would gain what? The true sense of things. True sense of things. Can you hear the truth tone? And we really want to be, our thought really wants to roam into the realm of the truth. A wonderful sense. Look away from the fading. The moment we look away from that which is fading and see the permanent facts, then we have the true sense of things. No more the wrong sense of things. Where shall the gaze rest? But in the unsearchable realm of mind. How do we do that? We must look where we would walk, and we must act as possessing all power from Him in whom we have our being. Can you see how man claims the possession? We possess, we act so as man would act, namely possessing. He's the heir of the Father. He has inherited everything. Therefore he possesses what the Father has. And therefore we act as having it, and having all power of Him in whom we have our being, life. This whole paragraph is just full of truth and life. And even if you have noticed that she brings in here, really in life, that fatherhood sense again, that fatherhood sense which we had in the main tone of life, she uses it now as a sub-tone of life in order to bring out manhood. See, how did she say? We said that fatherhood sense is what you entertain in your consciousness, that you will experience. Didn't we say that? And here, it's the same thing. But she says, mortals must look beyond fading finite forms. Where shall your gaze rest? Huh? What is your consciousness if they would gain the true sense of being? Where shall the gaze rest? Again, what is your model? What is your ideal? You remember, the fifth main tone was all, what is your ideal? Is your ideal a true ideal or a wrong ideal? Here she brings it up again and says, if you want to be a true man, is your gaze resting on something wrong, on the wrong sense of being? Or is your gaze resting on the facts of being? If your gaze is resting on the facts of being, you are a man. You are a man then. Naturally, it would mean just a closer analysis. We would have had more time and so on. But you see that so often, you see that once she has established a main tone, that she uses that main tone afterwards in the other tones as a subtone. As if you would take what has been established before and take it on and say, I don't leave that behind. That's now my foundations. You see? And when I want to explain something more, I explain that on the old foundations I have gained. And here you have it, comes up time and time, that the moment it touches the subtone of life, she will express it through that main tone of life. Okay, we go on. As mortals gain more correct views. Something in me says at once, oho, correct, that has to do with truth, correct views of God and man. Multitudinous objects of creation, which before were invisible. She doesn't say which didn't exist, but were invisible, which were not known, we were not conscious of, will become visible. That which has existed as a fact about us and which we were not seeing spiritually, now we begin to see spiritually. You see? Now we begin to see what we are. It is as if she would say the truth of being that existed in the subconscious or in the unconscious now comes up to the conscious and now we are aware of it. We are seeing it. When we realize that life is spirit, never in nor of matter, this understanding will expand into self-completeness. This is the term she uses at her time for what the people today use all over the world now, the claim for self-realization. They want to realize their self. They want to realize what they are. They want to be what they are. And they call it self-realization. She called it self-completeness. Man is complete in his whole being, finding all in God good and needing no other consciousness. Wonderful. Truth is truth, huh? Says, truth is truth says here, you know, accept for yourself all that is belongs to a complete consciousness. That is your self-realization, your self-completeness. And accept no other consciousness. Accept no other consciousness. No other consciousness about a mortal man, a fallen man, a sick man, or whatever it is. It's all your consciousness that defines your manhood. Terrific. And then she ends it up with the next one and says, spirit and its formations are the only realities of being. I say, yes, funny, it starts out with spirit and its formation is mind and so on, and they are the only realities of being, of spirit. What on earth has that to do now with the subject? And I'm quite curious. I go on, matter disappears under the microscope of spirit. I feel, golly, that has to do again with spirit and matter. The disappearing of matter before spirit. I get bewildered. So I go on and say, and read, sin is unsustained by truth. Oh, at least there is something about truth said here, but about sin. What has sin now to do in that whole thing, you know? And sickness and death were overcome by Jesus. Yeah, but why should Jesus suddenly come in? Who proved them to be forms of error. Oh yes, forms of error has a little bit to do about truth. I'm absolutely bewildered at this point. I just don't know anymore where I am in that text. Spiritual living and blessedness, that's very comfortable, are the only evidences by which we can recognize true existence. Yes, true existence, that's what I would like to do, but what has the other one to do? That blessedness and that spiritual living and that all that sort. And feel the unspeakable peace which comes from an all-absorbing spiritual love. Yes, that is nice. I would like to have that sense of an unspeakable peace which comes from an all-absorbing spiritual love. That would be nice, but the whole thing seems to be one great muddle. Doesn't seem to have any consistent line in it. Or do you find one? At that moment I may not find it. I feel this is really muddling up things now at the end of that wonderful tome. So that I guess I have to think it over a bit further. That will happen. That will happen time and time and time. And it doesn't, it's good. That doesn't matter. And so we'll break up now this talk here at this point and think it over a little bit. And then when we come back at 7 o'clock, we'll talk about it again.